Hi, thank you for having me. Yes, I'm Allison. I'm an acupuncturist and traditional Chinese medicine practitioner from Vancouver, BC. And I primarily specialize in fertility and reproductive health.
I'm extremely excited to have Allison on the show because I met her on Instagram. And she was actually really nice when I messaged her a long time ago. And I felt like this person is somebody I actually want to like get to know. So Allison, thank you for being so kind on social
No
media.
problem. I feel like that should be a given for everyone.
Right? But it's not.
It's
Because Allison is well trained in fertility and women's health, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about women's health today. Focusing primarily in endometriosis. I know that you have experience firsthand. If you could kind of like give us your story more in a background about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So yes, I kind of specialize, a lot of my practice specializes in treating endometriosis, the pain and symptoms, as well as the fertility side of it. And that kind of was an accident because I started specializing in women's health before I actually got diagnosed with endometriosis. So I kind of had all this background knowledge. I was treating it every day in the clinic. And then one day, and I had a pelvic ultrasound, which revealed I had a pretty large cyst on one of my ovaries, and it was particular to endometriosis. There's different kinds of cysts, but that one they could tell was due to endometriosis. And then all of a sudden, I had this diagnosis. And so I spent a lot of time working on myself holistically and eventually getting surgery, getting the diagnostic process done, and been treating myself holistically ever since.
That's really amazing. I think it's so great that you're an acupuncturist yourself, so you kind of know what you're supposed to do for yourself. But I think for the listeners, they're probably wondering, how do you know when the intervention is best used with Western medicine or when to use Eastern medicine like Chinese medicine?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the individual and their circumstances, their goals, their quality of life, how much pain they're in. And my specific kind of type of endometriosis, my cyst was growing fairly rapidly, and I would have pretty intense flare-ups just kind of come out of nowhere. And that was pretty debilitating. And so I opted to have surgery to get the cyst removed and all the other endo they could find. And I've been free of flare-ups ever since then. That was about 2 years ago. And so I've just been kind of trying to treat myself holistically ever since then, with like acupuncture and herbs. I did try the birth control pill after I had surgery. It did not agree with me
Oh,
whatsoever.
no.
I'm sure a lot of women kind of have their own birth control pill stories. But there's a lot of medications, there's surgeries, there's a lot of holistic things that you can do. And so I think it really just depends on, are you trying to conceive ASAP? Are you just trying to, deal with the pain and some of the symptoms? And it depends how bad your pain is, how often do you have it? So it's very dependent on the individual. And the things that I recommend for my patients, it will depend on those factors.
I see. But for you personally, you mentioned that this happened 2 years ago when you had the surgery. How long did you have to suffer from the pain before getting that diagnosis?
I actually didn't have that much pain. The diagnosis kind of came as a surprise. I was getting the pelvic ultrasound because I went to my GP, or I didn't really have a family doctor in Canada. We just have lots of walk-in clinics. And so I went to a walk-in clinic to get my iron levels tested. And they were really low. The doctor asked me, "Oh, how are your periods?" And I said, "Oh, they're a little bit irregular, but not too bad." And she suggested I get a pelvic ultrasound. And I was like, "Sure, why not? That sounds kind of fun." I'm always kind of nerdy with health things like that. I was like, "Yeah, I want to see my insides. That's cool." And so I got the ultrasound, and that's when I was actually diagnosed. So, I mean, yes, I had a little bit of period pain, but honestly, no other symptoms I ever would have thought I had endometriosis.
You mentioned so you walked into the clinic because you wanted to check your iron level. So
Yeah.
were there specific indications of were you lightheaded? Were you tired all the time? Were those kind of like the reasons? Or I guess the question is more of what drove you to look at your iron level specifically?
Yeah, I've always just historically had very low iron levels. It's always something I've had to monitor throughout my life.
I see. So then
It was more of like just a check-in, like, oh, I
got
haven't had
it.
it tested in a year or so. I should probably do that kind of thing.
Were you taking herbs or any supplements like that prior to going into the clinic?
I think I did take some herbs to like, and I did treatments to like regulate my cycle and to like better support digestion so I could absorb more iron and stuff like that. Definitely supplements helped.
Okay. And did you find that helpful?
Yeah, to a certain extent, for sure. Once I got my iron levels up, I think that was actually one of the reasons why my period was very irregular. Once I got my iron levels up to a really good amount through iron infusions, actually, that was when my period just became like very clockwork.
Oh, good, good. Okay, got
Yeah.
it. So then, wow, that's kind of like a surprise, right? I can only imagine kind of I would probably be like, what? Like how could that be, right?
Yeah,
So
it was definitely crazy, especially like having, this was a disease that I treat every day at work, and now I have it too. It's very like, I don't know, almost fate, but also bittersweet at the same
yeah,
time.
I know, but sometimes I also think it's a blessing too, because from your firsthand experience, and I don't mean that, that I want you to experience this, but the fact that you have the experience, you can definitely relate with your patients a lot more,
Oh, absolutely. And
which I
that's so
think they
valuable.
appreciate. Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when you did have those symptoms, well, you didn't have painful symptoms. Once you discovered that you had the cyst, how quickly was the decision for you to go into surgery?
I did wait a little bit. So I was kind of hesitant about surgery at first. And part of the reason was because I actually didn't like the gynecologist that I was first referred to. I didn't like his energy was just really off. He was just super blasé about everything. And I finally decided to do surgery because I was doing ultrasounds like every 6 months. It kept growing. I kept getting more and more flare-ups because it was after we found out that I had the cyst that I started getting some flare-ups and started getting pain. It just kind of started getting worse and worse. And I realized, okay, I need to get on the wait list for surgery because by the time I get surgery, I'll probably really need it. And so, yeah, with that one gynecologist I was with, we were filling out I guess the paperwork to put me on the wait list for surgery. And he's like, okay, yeah, so we're going to do the cystectomy, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, well, are you going to get rid of any other endo while you're at it? He's like, yeah, sure, why not? And just like starts writing it on the form too. I'm just like, I don't want this person near me.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. It's like they just didn't really think about you as a patient, right? And just to, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't get the feeling that he like really cared or took it this seriously, and it was serious to me.
And I think that kind of goes to the point of the importance of making sure you find the right provider or the right person to
Yes.
work with, whether it is an
Definitely.
acupuncturist or a surgeon of any kind. Got to make sure you have that trust going on. So
Yeah, definitely.
I could see why you would be worried, especially if the person, if you're worried and the other person is just kind of like nonchalant, it's kind of scary. But I think one of the things, I took my mom to get cataract surgery, and the doctor once told me, he said, well, it's actually a good thing that we're not freaking out, because that just basically means we've been doing this for a long time. And I was like, oh,
Oh, that's a good point.
that's a good perspective. And I had to explain to my mother. I was like, mom, it's
Yeah.
okay. They've been doing this so much they can do it in their sleep. Okay, well,
There's a
I'm glad.
balance, though, you know?
But I'm glad to hear that you're pretty steady right now. Did you have any flare-ups, or how does Chinese medicine or acupuncture come into play post-surgery?
Yeah, I did it a lot too. I did a lot of herbal therapy and acupuncture to kind of help with the healing process and to also try to reduce adhesions and scar tissue, because that's really common with abdominal surgery. And then stuff to help with like blood flow and preserving fertility, ovarian health, and that kind of stuff too. So I did do quite a bit of acupuncture and herbs after my surgery.
Okay, That's great. So let's talk a little bit more about that, because you said a lot of really important key points there where you mentioned about the adhesions, the blood flow, the healing process. Can you give us more insight from your Chinese medicine background as a provider? How can one utilize Chinese medicine, acupuncture, herbal supplements to do all of what you just mentioned?
Yeah, well, I think regardless of what surgery you're having, I think acupuncture and Chinese medicine can be really helpful pre, post, whenever you get the okay for your doctor. I found that acupuncture was just really good at breaking up some of the tissue and like the tightness of the muscles, because your muscles kind of naturally tighten when there's pain. And then also after surgery that you've been cut open, and your muscles are trying to protect you. So kind of releasing some of that muscle tension, helping with improve the blood circulation, reducing some of the inflammation. I found that part really helpful.
From your experience, were the treatments very localized or were the needles placed elsewhere? Can you kind of talk about that process?
Yeah, definitely both. I love doing local acupuncture on the abdomen if things are like really tight, really constrained. It just needs a, you know, a bit better circulation. There's also a lot of really awesome points to help with abdominal stuff and hormones and inflammation, like on the hands, on the legs. I do a lot of stuff like work with the nervous system, and I love doing like ear points and points on the head and stuff like that.
What Allison is alluding here is that we can treat the problem in many different ways, utilizing points in different locations, focusing primarily on what the patient actually needs. How frequent would you say one would need treatments?
I feel like it depends on how much pain you're in initially. Like whenever I'm seeing a patient, obviously they're usually coming to me in pretty acute pain because they need help. And so kind of initial frequency is pretty ideal until we can kind of gain some good healthy momentum, get things really flowing, gain some ground, and then kind of start tapering off treatments once things are more maintained and more manageable to sort of a more maintenance dosage. And so that will apply for after surgery, maybe like once or twice a week for a few weeks, see how you do, because everyone's body responds so differently to acupuncture. Some people need a lot more initial frequency. Mm-hmm. Some people respond super fast and super effectively and don't need as much. I'm sure you know, as an acupuncturist, yeah. Everyone's body responds so differently. So we really have to cater the treatment plan and the appointment frequency to the individual patient.
Right. No, that's well said. I mean, I think a lot of times patients generally want to know how quickly or how frequently they should be getting treatments because they want to see the outcome right away. And yeah. I think that leads me into the next question is, for you personally, as well as your general practice, how soon would you usually see outcomes from doing acupuncture treatments for any symptoms related to endo?
Yeah, I would definitely like to see an improvement in some symptoms after at least a couple months of treatment. Hmm. If we're not noticing anything by then, I mean, it could be even something small. I feel like a lot of practitioners say 3 months, but I like to see something within 2 months, even if it's just, or even 1 month. Like improvement in energy or digestion or PMS is just like a little bit better. I want to see like some kind of sign that you're responding, because if not, then I want to change something and I want to change it right away so we can get those results that we're looking for. So that might mean change in supplements or change in treatment protocol. I might try a different style of acupuncture, and I'm always just kind of changing and shifting as I'm seeing my patients' symptoms progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think that's a really good tip for all of our listeners today, is to make sure that they kind of keep an eye out to see if there's any sort of improvements on their end and then work with their practitioner. Because I know some patient actually has come to me and said the doctor that they work with for some reason just never really changed anything and they never really saw results. And that to me is kind of like a red flag where I'm like,
absolutely.
Okay, well, you're not getting that individualized care that you should be getting from acupuncture.
Yeah. And that's what acupuncture and Chinese medicine, it's like, that's the beauty of it, because it's so personalized to the person. Mm-hmm. It should shift and change as your body shifts and change. Like that's what makes it so effective and cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I think that's a pro, but then it also kind of leads into the con of it as well, which is you don't know, right? Like in regards to Because the following question that I have for you is like, what are your pros and cons in terms of utilizing Chinese medicine in women's health for endofertility or what have you? What would you say is a plus or a minus or a pro or con, however way you want to put it?
Right. That's a really good question, because there's pros and cons to any kind of style of medicine, yeah. Western, Eastern. And yeah, you know, I'm saying a million times, it really depends on the person and what their goals are. So I feel like Chinese medicine and acupuncture is kind of like really slow, steady, but we're making like really significant but subtle deep changes. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like Western medicine, it specifically regards to women's health, it's kind of very straightforward and a bit of like more of a band-aid approach. Mm-hmm. But then the really cool thing about acupuncture and Chinese medicine is that we're really getting to the root cause of what's going on hormonally or going on with the nervous system or inflammation. And we're really treating it at that level, which means that those positive health changes and results can be long lasting.
Yeah, well said. I think another question for you then is, do you utilize lab work as a model for checking in to see whether or not the progress is good or bad for the patient?
Oh, definitely. Yes. I love lab work and hormone panels and everything. I find it really helpful for, yeah, like you said, monitoring treatment. Are we getting the hormones balanced? Are, mm-hmm. you know, cortisol levels better, vitamin nutrient levels healthy and where they're at? I think that's really important, because things like thyroid, vitamin D, progesterone levels, all these are so insanely important for women's health. And it's really important that they're in the ideal range. And these are kind of the things that I think Western medicine is really awesome at. And so I love to take, you know, the things I like about Western medicine and bring it into my own practice, because I like to practice really holistically and integratively and use all the things that I think are really helpful for my patients to get the best results.
Yeah, I definitely align with that. So when you talk about the hormones with patients who have endometriosis, let's say, we'll talk about fertility too, but I think for endometriosis, what do you generally see in terms of their lab work that that would kind of like spark that sort of question of, is it endometriosis that this person might be experiencing?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because there's actually no biomarkers that have been proven to be effective for like endometriosis diagnosis. There's some actually like cancer markers, like the CA125, that can be used that might be able to tell if there's endo, but it's really not very accurate. So yeah, there's no exact biomarker, but I do like to see if someone's able to do kind of some estrogen liver function tests to see if their estrogen's like being properly metabolized and detoxed in their body, because a lot of endometriosis and, you know, fibroids and pelvic pain, a lot of these syndromes happen from like an estrogen excess or dominance, where your body is having trouble properly eliminating excess estrogen, and it builds up and causes a lot of these painful and uncomfortable symptoms. So that can be helpful for monitoring the progress of, are we improving the hormone levels? And then I often do see low progesterone in some of my patients with endometriosis. And so helping to boost the progesterone levels and get those balanced can really help level out the progesterone and estrogen and help with some of the symptoms.
Is there a particular approach that you take when you're treating these patients?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like a lot of the like estrogen detox symptoms are very much like liver qi stagnation in Chinese medicine. The like painful periods with clots and breast tenderness and bloating or headaches, a lot of these like very liver qi stagnant symptoms do correlate with like estrogen dominance, your liver and digestive system is having a hard time properly eliminating. So it can be helpful and like really cool just to see those, I guess, corresponding things in Western and Chinese medicine.
So when we talk about fertility then, because a lot of women who have endometriosis have a harder time conceiving, do you notice if there's any sort of pattern in these women?
Yeah, I see a lot of advanced maternal age in my clinic, low AMH or poor ovarian reserve. And then I see a lot of other kind of hormonal imbalances like thyroid disorders or people that other have other chronic health issues that are influencing their mm-hmm. fertility. There's a lot of autoimmune things that I see because autoimmune issues can prevent fertility. And then, yeah, endometriosis, PCOS, amenorrhea or lack of a period or lack of ovulation. So mm-hmm. kind of there's so many different kind of parts to look at with fertility. It's mm-hmm. are you ovulating? Are you getting enough mm-hmm. and absorbing enough nutrients for healthy mm-hmm. fertility? How's the blood flow? How's the nervous system? How's the immune system? Because that's also really important for conception to occur. So yeah, there's so many things that like have to line up perfectly for conception to occur. There's got to be a good healthy egg, a good healthy sperm, an open fallopian tube, a thick enough uterine lining, a good, you know, uterine microbiome. Like there's so many little things that need to be in place for mm-hmm. healthy fertility and conception. Mm-hmm. And so our job is just to kind of using the symptoms or the lab work or whatever the patients come in with and analyzing everything and kind of using detective work to figure out what's going on and how we can best help them with what we know about Western medicine, but also with Chinese medicine.
It's apparent that we're very complex individuals. So when you're working with a patient, what is your approach? Do you look at them individually in terms of different symptoms and focus on that? Do you put them in a more systemic overall sort of treatment plan? How would you approach it?
Yeah, that's a really good question too. I think it will depend on the case, but if there's a really complicated person, I always just try to like zoom out and go back to the very basics of Chinese medicine. So yin, yang, qi, blood, what are their different organ systems telling me? Because that's kind of one of the really cool things about Chinese medicine is that no matter what's going on Western medicine wise, and sometimes I need to completely ignore all of their diagnoses and all of their lab work and just really go back to the foundations of Chinese medicine and mm-hmm. Just treat them really simply if there's something really complex going on. And I do find the patients that are really complex respond really well to really mm-hmm. simple or really subtle acupuncture treatments until maybe their body's in a better shape that I can do, I don't know, a bit more complicated or specific things. But some of the things I really focus on for fertility are a good gut. We need really good digestive system. And then like nervous system and sleep. Like if you're not sleeping or if you're not if your digestive system's a mess, those are always some of my first go-tos that I want to address in my patients struggling with infertility.
I agree with that completely. I think what you just said about making it simple, right? When a person mm-hmm. comes in with so many complexities, the first thing is to go back to basics and make it as simple yeah. as possible. I've worked with a lot of fertility patients too. And what I find is a commonality, and you point to both of those, which is digestive health and lack of sleep. Mm-hmm. But I think lack of sleep also hand in hand with what we've been saying or alluded to, liver qi stagnation, which in translation yeah. to conventional medicine is more so of a lot of stress. There's a lot yes. of inflammation, a lot of times women I notice who have perfect labs, absolutely nothing wrong with them, but they couldn't conceive mm-hmm. for years. And yeah. then it turns out it's because they just don't have a very nurturing environment for them to conceive. And yes. I like the your sea of chi, right? Like like what you talk about in terms of your business and your practice is that I think is a huge component in making sure we have enough energy or enough, the woman needs or the womb needs to be strong enough for them to take on developing a brand new human being, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
yeah.
yeah. But, I agree.
But I have to say though, I think sometimes women, we're so hard on ourselves and we think that it's us who's the problem, but it's not always true. It's also because sometimes it's our partner, right? The sperm
yes.
quality.
Women are and only 50% of the picture.
exactly. And I think I kind of want to make sure that we talk about that. Cause I think a lot of times women, we feel like, oh, this is our role. We should be a mother and we're not yeah, being able to yeah. have kids. And then they feel like they're broken. Yeah. And I was like, no. And lo and behold, it's actually not them. And that was when mm-hmm. I was like, we definitely need to make an awareness of that 50%, right?
The
sperm absolutely also has a role in this.
So yeah, a big role.
Yeah, when you're doing your assessment, say in clinic, I would assume you also look at the sperm count. Or what else are you looking for within the sperm infertility to assure that it's not just the woman?
Yeah. Well, semen analysis is just, hands down, you have to do it. We need to look at it before, making any decisions moving forward. Even if, they've fathered children before, or they think they have the best sperm in the world, we always just need to take a look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. And I personally like to see the numbers kind of well above the average. Like, even if things are kind of borderline, like you're just barely passing with the okays with sperm count and motility, progressive motility, morphology, if things are still just like kind of barely, then that still means you need treatment. And that's always part of my initial intake, because yes, most of the time I'm just seeing the woman. I love when couples come together and then I can kind of get a feel for both of them for what's going on. Mm-hmm. If I'm just seeing the female, then I'm always asking them about their partner. What was their semen analysis like? What's their overall health like? Do they drink? Do they smoke? Do they smoke any weed? Are they in the hot tub and saunas, four or five times a week? Like, all of these really important things for healthy sperm too. I'm always, focusing on that as well.
So do you have any recommendation or advice to women and men who may be experiencing endometriosis in their life or infertility, and how they can mitigate these health issues using Chinese medicine or any other modalities that you recommend?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to get a really solid team around you. Like, you can't just do it on your own. And so that might mean people or help professionally or whatever for emotional health and mental health and getting through it that way. And then a bunch of doctors or some holistic providers like naturopath or acupuncturist. Like, find a lot of really good people in your team, but then also make sure, especially if you're seeking an acupuncturist or naturopath or integrative health practitioner, that they specialize in fertility, endometriosis. That is so important, because it's a very specific and very vast field, and there's a lot that you really need to know in order to effectively treat. So make sure that that's kind of what they do and what they're really passionate about, and make sure you're really comfortable with them too. And just know that it's all of this is like infertility and endometriosis and all this stuff is really common. But there is a lot of help and a lot of resources and a lot of things that you can do to get your body in a good shape. And that might require a bit of research and learning on your part. And it's kind of an unfortunate part of the endometriosis community specifically, where we tend to know a bit more than our doctors. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that will eventually change sometime, at least, our family doctors, maybe not our, specific gynecological surgeons, but but like our regular family doctors, we tend to know more about endometriosis because we've had to lean on ourselves and take the responsibility of learning our disease and what we can do to help ourselves. And I think it's kind of a blessing and a curse that we kind of have to rely on ourselves to do this, but also in the research process, we can really learn and gain a lot of really good information of things that we can do to help ourselves.
Another big question that a lot of people ask is, how does one even get access? Or what's your thoughts on that? Because I know in Canada and the United States, we have very different healthcare systems. Fertility is not a covered benefit here in the States. What is it for you in Canada? And I know you've lived both in the States and in Canada. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. So in Canada, fertility is actually not covered either. Mm. And so it's like one of the only things that isn't covered. I mean, some of my patients have like benefits from their job, where they're able to get some medications covered And like the initial consultation to see a reproductive endocrinologist is free if you get to have the referral from your family doctor. There is a bit of a wait list depending on the fertility clinic that you want to go into, but it's primarily private medicine. I think it might be different in some other provinces. I think Ontario or a couple other provinces, they might have a little bit of it covered, but primarily in Canada, you're just paying out of pocket too, which I know is probably similar in the States. Fertility treatment and endometriosis surgery is not cheap. It is very expensive. I did get my endometriosis surgery was completely free because we have social health care, and that was a medically necessary surgery. Or I guess they technically call it elective, but so I had to wait a few months for it. But fertility is not also kind of considered elective. It's not medically necessary, so it's not really covered in Canada, which I hope and I so much that one day it changes, because I know like in the UK and in Australia, they cover a few rounds of IVF, which is so life-changing and would be so helpful for so many people. So I hope eventually, but right now all my patients are paying out of pocket.
It's a little unfortunate for sure. Thank you so much for sharing everything you've shared so far. I think it's very insightful. It's a lot. And hopefully once we get more feedback, probably got to bring you back onto the show to talk more deeply into some of the things that we've discussed about today.
One thing that I always want to remind my patients that if they're dealing with like a chronic health issue, like chronic doesn't necessarily mean that you can't heal and you still can't get better and you still can't feel better. Like there's always, no matter, you know, how many things that you've tried or how many doctors you've been to, you know, like don't give up finding one that will work for you and that you like, and that there's always things and treatments and options that you have to feel better.
I love that. I think that answered the first question that I was going to ask you in the closing statement here, which is great, you know, because I think a lot of times people feel like I have a chronic condition and that's the end of it. And they don't think of that there's other options. And the funny thing is that, well, it's not funny, but the sad thing is that a lot of times it's because they didn't have the exposure. They were not provided the resource, so they didn't even know about it, right? So
yeah, definitely. The awareness part is lacking for many illnesses.
Right. I mean, this is, I think the whole movement of acupuncture and Chinese medicine became so popular because of chronic pain and chronic conditions that are going like way out of control. So thank you so much for bringing up that point. All right. Now for a little bit more of a personal question. What do you see as the most important thing in your life?
Oh, the most important thing. I think it's like the things that bring me joy and love into my life. And so that's, you know, the things that I love to do, the people in my life that I love, my family, my friends, my patients, the people that I just get to connect with on a really special level every day.
I love it. All right. Last question. If you can have one do-over, what would it be?
Well, I don't really like to live with regrets, but I do kind of wish I could do over our like quarantine time from the beginning of the pandemic, because I was like such a like stressed, anxious mess that I coped by like doing so much. And I was like studying and researching and, you know, doing a whole bunch of continuing education credits and like learning stuff and lectures. And I really wish that I spent that time just relaxing and doing absolutely nothing, because I will never get 2 months straight where I don't have to work ever again in my life. And I spent most of it working.
Oh, well, that just means you're a high achiever. And yes, you learned a lot during that process.
I did. I don't really regret it, but I kind of wish I just relaxed a bit more.
No, touche. I think that's a great point, making sure you have a good balance. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. But if you have any closing remarks, yes, of course.
Well, just thank you for like giving the space to like talk about how awesome acupuncture and Chinese medicine is. And I see you doing really awesome things in the field. So thank you for your hard work.
I appreciate it, Allison. That's very kind. If you want to learn more about Allison Locke and what she's been doing, check out cfchihealing.com or visit her on TikTok and Instagram. That's SEA_OF_QI_healing. Thank you so much for listening in. This is your host, Dr. Amy Truong. on Road to Wellness, the podcast. Be well, take care of yourself, and we'll talk to each other again soon.